If you're like me, you love and miss that golden era of Christian music. From the Jesus music of the 70s, the monster vocalists of the 80s, and the creativity and risk-taking of the 90s and early 2000s. I'm Andy Christman, and for the past four decades, I was privileged to be smack dab in the middle of this crazy and beautiful thing that we call CCM. As a member of the group For Him, I got to know so many great people with even greater stories, and I don't want to keep these stories to myself. That's why I created One Degree of Andy, so you can join me as I reminisce with my friends and colleagues. My hope is that as you experience these conversations, you'll go back and listen to that golden era of music and fall in love all over again, just like I have. This is the One Degree of Andy podcast. My guest today is one of the funniest people I have ever met. Tim Hawkins has been my friend since the mid-90s, and it was great to catch up with him today to hear his story and just to see what's going on in his life today. And I can't wait for you to hear this really, really great conversation with my friend Tim Hawkins. Hey, before we get there, I want to remind you to consider becoming a premium subscriber. That way you get early access to every episode. You can watch videos of these conversations, and you just help keep this podcast going. I appreciate so many of you that are premium subscribers, and I just want to say thank you for your investment into this podcast. Also, head to my website this week, andychristman.com. There you can find out about my radio show. It's called Worship with Andy Christman, and you can get on my newsletter. That way you don't miss a thing happening here at the podcast. Okay, here's my conversation with the one and only Tim Hawkins. Dude, how many years has it been since we've seen each other?
Did we see each other at a conference? Was that... You're leading the music for it.
Yeah, but that was like maybe 2007, 2008, maybe.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
It was. And I was impressed. Let me give you a compliment.
Okay.
Can I give you a compliment?
Sure. I'll take all you got.
The way you led worship is like one of my peeves with worship is people sing too high. the guy, you know, we're not Chris Tomlin at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Can you bring it down? You know, not Barry White. I'm not a Bee Gee. Can you put somewhere in the middle? And what you did was, cause you're a tenor, right? So
you
would sing the first verse to kind of show everybody this is a song. And then you would drop it and it was gold.
Oh, I did that.
Like, you did that. Oh, and, right. And I always remembered it. And I was remembering if I ever talk to Andy again, I'm just going to let him know that memory.
Yeah.
That was gold. It was awesome. So well done.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you very much. Well, my wife was asking me this morning if I was doing any interviews today, and I said, yeah, I'm going to be talking to Tim Hawkins. And she immediately just launched into, welcome to McDonald's. We got shake fries.
That's right.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah. I'm like, that takes me back, dude, to when we would do shows together. I mean, way back in the mid 90s, or even, yeah. I don't know, maybe earlier than that, there was a level that you brought. And again, I said this on, I had Shonda Pierce on a few episodes ago. And we travel with several comedians, and they're all friends of mine. But there were several of you that just kind of went to this next level where you're just like, yeah, you're going to be able to do this for a long time. I mean, it was,
thank you.
Not just your brilliance with comedy, but you had this extra gear with your guitar and singing mm-hmm. songs and all that kind of stuff. I just always knew, man, we're going to be seeing you for a long time. And sure enough, here we are, 40 years down the road?
Yeah. I mean, when I started, it was in clubs, but it was also, you know, I do a club on a Wednesday and then I do a youth group on a Thursday. Uh-huh. And it was all about stage time. So, really, in the church, though, at a youth group, take an hour, take as long as you want, just try to survive. And I think I enjoyed, I kind of learned guitar and comedy at the same time. Uh-huh. So, and then, you know, I was doing multiple age audiences. So music was just a good fit because it just brought an energy that could kind of engage everybody.
Yeah.
So, and plus, you know, I was raised, I listened to, you know, Weird Al and Ray Stevens and these guys. I just always like musical comedy, and you know, that's just what I do. It's just, once again, I'm kind of a frustrated rock star. I'm a, you don't see a lot of ginger rock stars. So I had to kind of go the comedy, you know, the comedy route. But
yeah, man, I grew up on Ray Stevens, Guitars In, and
Guitar Man,
Streak,
yeah.
And The Streak. And I think my wife and I still once a week say, "Don't look, Ethel.
Don't look, Ethel."
But it's too late. That's right. Oh man, yeah, that's what I grew up on too. My dad had country music playing in the house all the time when I was a kid, and just, you know, I think we missed that era of storytelling probably in today's music, but that was a real gift. So did you find that doing music was, you know, you said when, you know, early on you'd say they'd give you an hour. I mean, that's a little terrifying sometimes. You're like, I got to fill an hour here and keep the kids engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I would just kind of get tired of hearing myself talk. So it's like, it's nice to jump around a bit. I'm kind of talked enough. Now let's do some music. And it's cool because, you know, on the road, really one of the biggest issues of being on the road is boredom. So I was, you know, you're sitting on a bus all day. So I'm like, well, I'm going to let's get better guitar. And I taught myself piano, you know, blues harmonica, just whatever. Yeah. And then I could incorporate this in the shows. And I'm just, my philosophy is just get good enough where you can use it. I can, you know, I don't need to rip, you know, be crazy with it, but just good enough where I can accompany myself. And it's at a good place right now, because especially with keyboards, I can sit and while you're kind of, you know, playing a little bit, you can do jokes and do stories and create bits. And it's fun. I used to just be more crazy and sweat a lot and run around. My kids make fun of me. I just do animal noises for punchlines and you know, and now it's getting to a point where I feel like the show is, this is kind of who I really am, you know, just sitting around the living room and just how we make each other laugh naturally, normally. So
yeah. How far has do you feel like your routine and your personality on stage has progressed since those early days? Are you?
Yeah. 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 It's when you first start out, you write what you think is funny. This is what I think, like your pages, oh, I'm writing all this material and it's all junk. It's all not usable. So what I learned was that when I would just tell the truth, people would laugh harder because I realized they related to what I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Talking about, like, if I say, my mom used to say this, well, she did used to say that. And I'm like, well, these people are, you know, just snapping, laughing and elbowing and all this stuff. I'm like, I realized that the people laugh because they relate, and then people laugh out of relief. Like, I'm not the only one out here that thinks this, you know, especially with church stuff, you know, when you do kind of hand raising, what people's hand raises look like and the way people pray and things like that. I never got into doctrinal stuff. Well, it was just observational, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have I think one of the gifts for Christian comedians is, can I call you a Christian comedian? Is that okay?
Whatever you want. Whatever. Hey,
I don't know.
If you don't laugh, you're going to hell. Yeah, that's what I.
a whole another level of material, as the church is just ripe for parroting and just finding ridiculous things that have been in the American traditional church for decades. That it feels like you could. It feels like you have an extra bag of things that you can take on stage with you with that, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, the old church and the new church, especially. I mean, even more so with the new church. I mean, one of the first jokes was non-denominational. I'd say, oh, what are you? You're a Baptist? Oh, you're a Catholic? Oh, you're non-denominational. It's like, well, we don't know what we are. And it's like, the joke was, yeah, you're just a Baptist church with a cool website. So, I mean, so, you know, it's true, right?
Yeah.
Remember Andy, they went through, everybody was taking the word Baptist out of the name. And they're like, oh, we're Mosaic now. We're Elevate. We're this or that. So, yeah. And once again, it was more, if it's man-made religiosity, I think that's fair game.
Yeah. And you get in trouble at all, skewering the church?
I don't know. You know, it's like the funnier it is, the more you get away with.
Yeah.
And I think that because I am one, I'm kind of in the family and I love the church. You know, a lot of comedians, secular comics, hate God because they had a bad church experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I had a good one. And it wasn't perfect. And there was goofiness and stuff. But it was just real folks. And I love Jesus. It's just like it's more comes out of a love for the church. And, you know, that's another part about progressing is when you first start out, it's all kind of a competition. You're trying to beat them. You're trying to, and then I realized it was more about serving. I say, you don't get laughs, you give laughter, and I'm here to serve. And that changed everything.
Yeah. So I really believe this. And Sean and I talked about this, is that, laughter is a gift from God. I think it's one of the great gifts he gives us as a release, just does something to our soul. But to get there, I think he also gives a gift of comedy.
Yeah.
To people, just like he gives a gift of music to someone like me, and you have that gift as well, but you also have this gift of comedy to make people laugh, to bring joy into their lives, to bring some lightheartedness to their world, if just for an hour or so. When did you know you were funny? Like, when did you know, I'm funny. Like, I'm good at this.
When I was about 6 years old, I saw a dead bird on the road, on the street, and I picked it up and I told it a joke and it flew away. And I knew then. I don't know. I mean, it's like, that's ridiculous. But
were you a performer? Or like, were you just like, did you entertain people when you were
young? Yeah, that was the icebreaker. Yeah, it was I could mimic and I could do voices, and we would basically recite comedy routines. Like you said, do Ray Stevens songs. We used to lip sync, the Chipmunks at Christmas time or for the family. And so it's probably the same as, when did you know you were a good singer? Is your family's going to be real nice. Well, mate, sometimes I guess, you do it in your local church and they're like, oh, you should make a record. You should get a record deal. Mm-hmm. And you ever see Waiting for Guffman?
Oh yeah.
Waiting for Guffman is one of my favorite movies. And why I love it is because it's that bubble community. Like, they do a little play for the town and they're like, yeah, you should go to Broadway.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, I think we should. We're really good.
Yeah.
So it's that delusion that you have. But when you start performing for strangers who don't have a skin in the game, they don't have to like it all. They're at a banquet and all we have some speaker.
Yeah.
And it's like, is this guy better than the cheesecake? That was kind of my goal. When I would perform at, these banquets and stuff, is be more engaging than the food.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to know was, where did you start? Like, what were your first opportunities to actually do a comedy set in front of people?
Yeah, it was open mic nights at comedy clubs are like 5 minutes a week. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the things were these, appreciation banquets, what would you call it? I just did one the other day. It was, any kind of a function, whether it be a corporate function, a real estate meeting, anywhere where I could get, time in front of it. And that could be 10 minutes or 20 minutes, up to 45. So it was just kind of wherever I could find an audience, I would do it.
And those are probably, I'm sure you mentioned like church connections. Those were, not just the open mic nights, but like church connections where you could go and speak at banquets and stuff like that. I mean, that's how I started singing. Was my mom took me around to, when I was 10, 11 years old, she would take me around to little banquets and WMU meetings and Bible studies. And she was like the first, I think she invented the soundtrack, because she would like go to the lady who played piano down the street and give her some, give her some sheet music, and she would play it and she'd set the recorder up there and
record
the tape. And then, She was brilliant. I mean, just to be able to figure that out. And we could go anywhere and she'd take that little portable cassette recorder and just hit play and I would sing along with it. And, as a 11, 12 year old, just bring the house down, because here's this kid who could hit all the notes and wasn't afraid to get up there. And I think that's a big part of it, isn't it? Because, even if you're, and I think that's why I asked earlier, when did you know that this was probably what you could do for a living?
Well, I think it was more desperation. That's kind of sounds like a joke, but
no, I get
it
that.
It was like just trying to find, I knew I had something. I knew I was good at something. I was just kind of bouncing around from job to job and it was kind of frustrating. And then comedy was the one thing that I felt like I could drive the bus here. Mm-hmm. I could, I'm going to go in front of these 500 people. I know what to do. And at least it's kind of ignorance is bliss when you first start. You don't really know how bad you are. So you just got to grind it out, man. I mean, and then the audience, like I said, church is a great place to learn comedy because they're not, you're not going to get heckled or you're not going to get a beer bottle thrown at you, but they're also not going to laugh if it's not funny. More yeah. Oh, bless your heart. You know, bless your heart.
Yeah.
And he's doing his best.
Yeah.
So I learned quick that my audience was my best friend, and, you know, listen to what is working, and just, it's a constant tweaking. It's a constant, almost like a science project where using silence and using dynamic and, you know, not always being full on, but being able to use, you know, use that to perform and to get an idea across.
You mentioned Ray Stevens and, and Weird Al. Who are your other, who did you get your comic timing from? Like, who were you watching to try and emulate back in those days?
Yeah. Tonight Show, anything like that. A lot of comics on the Tonight Show, I would see. My dad and I used to watch all the time, and a lot of, you know, from Carlin to, you know, Jerry Seinfeld and all these, you know, all those guys. I mean, I really like physical comedy, you know, Chris Farley, that kind of stuff. Any kind of physical is funny because that's how we were funny at home.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad would be driving. He'd be driving the car and he just kind of look back at us and do like, he would, ooh, ooh, ooh. He would just do something weird. And it's like, it's bizarre, but it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's, and to me, it was the difference between saying funny things and saying things in a funny way, just being funny.
Yeah.
And, so once again, it's just about how do I relate and what's my point of view and trying to figure that out. So it took a while. Right.
What was your first breakthrough routine? Do you remember what it was? Do you remember if there was one like bit that you did that was like, okay, yeah, this is good.
Well, that's kind of where YouTube comes along, where I felt like it was at the right place at the right time. I had kind of grinded away for several years and I had kind of this, I had material. And then once YouTube came along, that's, we didn't know what, I still don't know what it is. It's so powerful and big.
Yeah, I'm clueless about YouTube, honestly.
Yeah. And I figured out real quick that, it's, you just create content and throw it out there. You never know what's going to hit. And one of the first things was, my first video that went viral, I didn't even do it. It was some kid that took a song. It was called Kids Rock. It was, rock singers singing kids songs.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then this kid made this stick figure animation, just real basic, and it got like a million hits. And we're like, wow. Okay, what's this? And it's just, YouTube is just promotion. It's all promotion. It's commercials. Mm-hmm. And you remember the old days where you'd send out flyers and VHS tapes, demos, and overnight it was, you could reach the world for free.
Yeah.
So, one of the first things that I had done was called the Homeschool Family. It was a Homeschool Family video, and, you know, the Homeschool Family. And we shot at my house with my kids and some other kids. We had kids from all over the neighborhood that were our kids in the video. And my video guy sent it to a couple of his friends. And like the next day he calls me, he goes, Google homeschool video. This wasn't even on YouTube. This was just, I forget where it was, but he just posted somewhere to his friends. And then he said, Google homeschool family video the next day. And it's just thousands of just, you got to see this.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And yeah. So that was one of the first things, like the homeschool family video. I did one called Cletus Take the Reel, that did well. And it's, Andy, it's like, that's okay. If you get a million views, that's saying something. That if you're getting 1,000 views, that's good. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
you have actual numbers that say people really do like this and they don't know me.
Yeah.
Right.
I went and watched, your Chick-fil-A song again today. And it's like 7.6 million views just on that one link. Yeah. And I know there are many more on YouTube, but you get to a certain point where, yeah, you're talking about not understanding how something goes viral. Sometimes it's an accident. You don't even know what you did. And all of a sudden you wake up the next morning, you've got a million views. It's some people can plan it. I've never figured out how to do it, but you know, content is king, right? If it's good and it hits a nerve with someone, people are going to like it and share it and watch it over and over and over.
Right. Again. It's a difference between saying that's a cute video to saying you got to see this.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. And I think that Chick-fil-A video, we didn't even post it. Somebody else, you know, ripped it off of the church video thing and they posted it.
Yeah.
So, and that kind of gives it a little more credibility because it's just somebody else who just liked it. Uh-huh. Not me like, hey, you're going to look. You're going to love this.
Yeah. Well, we did that with a Church on the Move that I've been a part of for a long time. We did a thing called Dad Life. And it
brilliant.
It was so good. And they did that.
Is that the one with the turtle? What is it? The ornamental turtles.
Yep.
Great myrtles. That dude, the star of that video, that guy's trip.
Yeah.
He's funny.
That's Chris Munch. And he's had quite a career doing, you know, different characters and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, he does that youth director that God used. What God hath wrought.
Yeah.
Hath wrought.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. And he does really? Steven Stevens and, you know, just a real gross single dude looking for a date on, you know, kind of a Christian mingle kind of thing. It's pretty amazing. But yeah, right. Chris was the guy that and his team that came up with that. And we didn't know even at, you know, with as big as Church on the Move was and what we were doing, we didn't know the power of YouTube. And somebody else took it, put it on YouTube, and overnight it was, you know, 3 or 4 million views, and we're just like, doggone it. You know, we got to figure out how to take advantage of this.
And, you're like, people ask me all the time, it's like, how can you go viral? I don't really know.
Yeah.
I think one thing is that there are subcultures on the internet, like Chick-fil-A lovers. So if you do a song called Chick-fil-A and it hits them, then it's going to spread like wildfire in that community. Or the homeschool community, that's going to spread within that community. And then those overlap with other communities. And then you kind of build your own fan base, which is the greatest thing about it, is that I didn't really have to sign with a label. I could just take a few years and build my own fan base. And then we were able to do ticketed shows as opposed to doing, you know, just come for a love offering or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who gave you your first start? Like, you know, you talk about, you know, just trying to do every little gig you could when you were just starting out. And that's the way, you know, I talk to artists all the time and they're, you know, or aspiring artists that will hire me to come in and coach them. And I'm like, how many shows you doing? How many gigs you doing? And I'm like, oh, you know, I've got one in 3 weeks. I'm like, that's not the way to do this. You've got to go out and perform everywhere, even if it's at your local coffee shop. Do something to get in a routine of figuring out who you are and what your message is. And so I you know, I understand that you were probably taking anything and everything in the early days, but then at some point was when we met you were in the circuit. I mean, we did several events with you in some really big venues and you know, some really big crowds. Who gave you that first shot to really get into those arenas?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, it's say yes so you can say no.
Yeah.
That was the thing. You say yes to everything. And you just, you said it perfectly. It's you have to just get in front of people. That's how this game is played, kind of. And, you know, and you'd have people that call you up, hey, come and do this for free. It's a great exposure gig.
Yeah.
You get exposure. Yeah. It's like, well, people die of exposure, right? That was the joke, you know? but back in the day, it's like, I'll do a lock-in at a youth thing. I'll do a real estate meeting in Oklahoma. I don't care. But you just never know. No gig will make you or break you, but there are certain ones that you do, like working with, what was it? The organization that worked with Sunday school teachers or whatever. It was like a kids ministry organization I performed at and doing things like that. Or I did a Wesleyan ministers conference one time for 1500 people. And for years I got shows off that one performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like those kinds of things that kind of gets the ball rolling. And once again, when YouTube came along and Facebook, it was just, you're leveraging the world, where it's easier to share, it's easier to get in front of people.
Yeah.
And then you're getting more shows and I'm able to do more material and kind of build and keep in write and and get better at this and figure it out.
Did you have to figure out, because I know we did, but I would think someone that talks for a living has to figure this out a lot quicker. When you go into different denominations, there are different mm-hmm. languages and there are different taboos and there are different things you don't, you know, that aren't going to hit or could be offensive. You know, you do a Baptist church one night or a Baptist event one night, you do a charismatic Church of God event the next night. And a lot of times the two don't commingle. They don't react the same or, you know, they're
it's like you guys are probably for him. You're going to a Baptist church and they're clapping on the one or the three.
Yeah.
And you go to AOG, then they're clapping on the two and the four.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you're asking people to lift their hands. They're like, what? What are you talking about? We got Pentecostal people, you know, we'll talk about, you know, speaking in tongues and you're like, oh, you're not going back to our church again. Did you have to figure out how to navigate that? Well, you said you go into Wesleyan churches and a lot of Baptist mm-hmm. churches and Pentecostal churches.
Yeah, you do. And what's great about that is you learn flexibility and you learned what worked everywhere.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you're at a certain place, like a Baptist church, you can go inside baseball and talk a little bit about more of the quirks of that denomination. But I think all churches, I mean, in the 90s, things just kind of started to blend where it used to be where you go into this church, like, this is a Methodist church. It got to the point in the 90s where you couldn't tell because you're meeting in a revamped Walmart or you're meeting in these kind of more just generic type of buildings. So even today, the church I go to, I can't tell what denomination. I don't think it has that much of a bearing on it.
But. Yeah, it is. Somebody told me the other day they feel like it may have been, I don't know, maybe one of the guests I had on that's coming on pretty soon that was just talking about they see the church getting tighter than ever before, that those walls are coming down and we understand each other a little bit better and accept each other a little bit more. And you're right, we did see that in the 90s. I think a lot of that was because of the music and because of the entertainment that was so readily available that wasn't 20 years earlier. Because I can remember my parents telling me, don't you dare. I grew up Southern Baptist. Yeah, my parents were like, don't you dare go to your friend's Pentecostal church. Because he was keeping invite me to come as a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And they're like, don't do it. Don't do it. You don't know what you're in for. And
they drink real wine over there. Yeah. Ain't no grape juice there.
Yeah. They said they live like hell through the week and then they celebrate like heaven on Sundays. I'm like, okay. Sounds good to me.
Well, you're going to celebrate like heaven on Sunday, then go eat a triple cheeseburger and be a glutton and gossip about people. So, you know, with the internet, I think it just became a little more, the references started to be the same, whether it be, you know, movies, TV, music, things like that. Everybody was watching the same thing. Everybody was kind of, you know, blending in. So it's hard to tell the delineation now between whatever churches it's.
Yeah. So. Have you kept your career going? Have you kept it fresh? Mm-hmm. Because man, I look on your website today and it's like looking at your mm-hmm. touring schedule and sold out. Do you feel like there's a resurgence of what you, I mean, you've never really gone away. For him, we went away. And people can talk fondly about us like they will other artists and comedians, but you've never really gone away. You just continue to be very steady and grown your brand. Tell me how you've kept yourself fresh and kept that momentum going in your career.
Well, I never wanted to break it. I never wanted to break into the industry. I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want anything to do with, okay, now we're going to do a big Netflix special and you're just going to do these. I don't want that. I really like the shows that I'm doing now. And I try to make an analogy for it. I you go to these towns and they got, that barbecue place. It's an old shack that has a line around the, down, and they just start serve ribs until they run out. That's kind of way I would like to be, just really good. And the people who know me and they like what I do really well.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to please everybody. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. And just find enough people that enjoy what I do. And I like going to these little towns, Greenford, Ohio, with 300 people in the town and you sell 2,000 tickets and you're like, that's what I want to do. that's the kind of the stuff. I never wanted to break in. Oh, you got to be on Letterman and Leno and all this kind of stuff. I really like what I'm doing right now. Yeah. And I think it's about what's kept me going is I really like doing the art part of it. I like the creative process. I like having my antenna up for something that I think it might work on stage and writing it down and doing a new bit or something that works. And that new bit keeps you going. That's it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
a song that hits. Like mm-hmm. when you hit with a song, oh, this is great. We put this in the set list and it just kind of, it brings new life into it.
Well, I guess that's kind of the point I was trying to make is that, you know, you do this for long enough and you've been, I mean, again, we've known each other since the mid 90s. So
20 some years.
Yeah. It's been a long time that you've had this career. And, you know, everybody that I talk to, everybody that I know, at some point you hit a wall of creativity or you just kind of run out of gas or, yeah. You go, okay, I did that. Now I want to go do something else. Or the crowds just stop showing up. I mean, that's a real mm-hmm. thing too, is that you've run this all the way as far as you're going to take it. And there's, you know, you either play for 20 people a night or you go, you know, trying to find something else to do. And so that's kind of what I guess the reason I asked that question is what's kept you going? Like, you know, it was, you feel like you kept getting some fresh wind in your sails to go to this next level. And you know, clean comedy's big right now. I know, you know,
Nate Bergazzi, he's the biggest in the country right now.
Yeah.
He's doing the biggest shows and it's thrilling. It's so great. Leanne Morgan, people like that. Uh-huh. You know, even guys like, you know, the guys coming out of Nashville and, because that's the deal. It's like so many people are being passed over. Like when Jeff Foxworthy came along, he was talking to the flyover country, that he could speak their language. And there's a ton more of those people. Just normal folk.
Yeah.
So I think that, there's burnout whenever, I mean, I was doing 100 shows a year for 17, 18 years. And it was really, my family was starting to get the scraps and, it was not good. It was, people would ask me all the time in interviews, how do you find balance? You know, how do you find balance on the road? And the answer is I used to try to come up with, and it's, and finally I just said, you really don't find balance. That's just part of the gig. You have to go to these people and go to these places and, you know, 100 days, you know, dates a year, but you add in travel and that's another 50 days.
Yeah.
That's almost half the year. And okay. Now that I figured out the how, now why, you figure out, okay, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing now, I do about 50 shows a year now. I go and it's great. And I have the material. I have enough new stuff that it makes it interesting. And it's just electric bills are still coming.
we need
floors.
And it sounds like you got work going on around there today too.
I know. My son's, we're redoing stuff in the house. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's just what I love to do. It's just, I love doing it, but I have enough time off. It's like, I think part of being a professional is that when you're on the road, that's what you're doing. And when you're off the road, you're present and investing in the people around you. And that's when it becomes fun, is that I'm giving full attention where it needs to be. And I can pick it up when I need to, and I can drop it, you know, because I used to be Andy. I mean, I was on writing all the material. I had 13 employees. I had two tour buses.
Wow.
And all this stuff, and whether I was working or not, these people are getting paid.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of great things. It was amazing.
You had two tour buses?
Two. Yeah. We had one for the crew and then we got one for me, like one of the slide outs that was, you know, I could bring
your family with you.
Bring my family if I needed to.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It got to the point where it run its course and I needed a break. But when your schedule's chiseled into stone,
sure.
You know, that's, how do I get out of this?
That's a real thing that people don't understand. And it's the one thing, I will tell you this, Tim, it's the one thing that forced me to start making some decisions about getting off the road was I realized I wasn't in control of my schedule. And you get to a certain point where you've had all the success and you do. You said it before, this life balance, this work-life balance.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist, you know, and we try to talk about it like it's a, like it's attainable, but it's not. It's going to fluctuate. It's going to be what we need to be for our job and for our family at different times. And our families understand this. They want us to put food on the table. Yeah. You know, they want us to put a roof over their heads. Like my wife is like, yeah, go, you know,
right.
Make
right.
an income. Yeah. I'm fine with that. So that's that, but that it is an inherent struggle, especially when you're gone. When you're gone, it's worse because you're absent, like you're completely absent. But it was that, you know, getting, and I said this on many of my podcasts, is I just remember getting a FedEx package on my doorstep on a Tuesday that would have a tour book in it for the upcoming tour. And it's, there's all the hotels, there's all the venues, you know, there's the flight schedules, there's the bus schedules, you know, here are the people who are going to be on the tour. And I'm just like, at what point do I get to make these decisions? And it's a double-edged sword because we paid people good money to make those decisions for us. But I'm also like, well, hang on, that's my anniversary.
Right.
And we're in Seattle on my anniversary. I mean, that's clearly all across country. I can't get back for that. That's my daughter's dance recital. That's my son's, you know, that's my son's graduation. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't know how much longer I can do this. So that's crazy that you would bring that up, because I look at you as someone, you know, that you're up there all by yourself on stage.
And
you're still a kind of, I'll use this word in the right way, a slave to the industry and the people that you put around you to help you achieve your dreams, which is such a conglomeration of all these things that you just, you know, everybody wants. But until you live it for a couple of decades, you don't really understand what all that takes. But that
it's not like a product. Family. Yeah, it's not like a product that you can walk away from. People can sell that product. It's the person. It's you. You have to physically be at these places. And being a dad, I mean, it's really, I don't impart a lot of wisdom to my kids. I think being a dad is mostly being there, being there present.
Yeah, you're right.
That's huge for a family.
Yeah,
and with the creative part of it, I mean, back in, you know, probably 2016, 17, things were starting to emerge. I wasn't depressed, but I could feel that I was on the cusp of it. And I was like, okay, I really see why people drink now because it's just a lot of, it's just something is wrong and something is, you get tired of that lack of balance. You get tired of creating, which you know you have to create, but you still have to do it. To be honest with you, if I wouldn't have stepped out, it's like, I'm going to start taking drugs, man, or do something that'll help me do this and stop feeling like this.
Well, and not just because you got to keep going, but you've got a persona and a personality you've got to be on stage.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't understand. I didn't have to go through that because I had three other guys to lean on and I could have an off night every now and then. And those guys would cover for me. But, you know, you guys that were out there doing solo, I have so much respect for you. You know, to see how long you did it and without a lot of controversy and without losing your family in the process. It's a real testament to, you know, the strength of your family, the strength of your faith. And, and honestly, just you being self-aware that this is something that's going to have to change at some point.
Yeah. And it helped because I never got into the fame thing. I never believed in fame. I just, once again, it was desperate. I know how to do this and I'm going to do it the best that I can. So, I think that I was always like, I know I'm a moron. I know I'm a fraud. It's like sometimes before I go on stage, I'm like, I am a fraud. I don't feel funny at all.
Oh yeah. I know that.
What are these people doing? What are these people doing here? But you know, once again, you're there to serve. This is, you get out of your own head. You're like, okay, somebody here drove miles and miles and they haven't laughed in years and they're going through it. And it got away from being, I'm focused on this one guy who hadn't laughed all night to the one person here that is losing it and this is really doing them some good.
That
changed everything. But it's the Bible is so great. I mean, Jesus is so awesome. It's about dying to yourself. You got to die, man. You can't. It says clearly, you know, you store up treasures in heaven. That's what that means. This stuff is fleeting. Fame and all that stuff that you're up literally one day and down the next. And that helped. I never bought into that. And when I had to step away for a while, I stepped away for about a year and a half. And, you know, of course, during the pandemic, but that was a story in itself. I mean, we said, okay, we're going to close the doors January 1st, 2020. And we, and then, you know, the world, I told my friends, I say, if I ever go on retirement, the world's going to come to an end. you know, so, really a lot of it had to do with me. Okay. I need some help. I need help. And I'm a good, you know, you think I'm a good guy. I'm a believer. I'm a pretty smart guy. I can figure, I know this marriage thing and I know this and I need help. I needed help.
Yeah. What'd you do? So tell me what you did during that 18 month or year and a half long break.
Just nothing. I didn't pick up a guitar. I didn't write anything. I call it emptying the cup. It's like you have the creative cup and it's full and there's nothing else. Kind of, you just got to empty it out and get away from it. And that was awesome. And just to try to rebuild our life and go to counseling and learn how to communicate in a compassionate way. You know, with my wife and with friends and, you know, just be a normal guy.
Yeah. I've experienced that as well. I did that in 2020 as well. Just took some time off right after Christmas in 2019 and, never went back to my full-time job just because there was an emptying out where I'm kind of like, I wake up in the morning and go, I don't have to do anything today. Mm-hmm. And it's very freeing. And if you can string enough of those together, and I know everybody's not as blessed to be able to do that, in whatever stage of life they're in. But I talk to worship pastors all the time, just going, you've got to at some point get off the stage. And I love how you talk about emptying the cup and then spend time cleaning it out and then set it to the side.
You know? And it's there.
And it'll always be there. God's not going to take it away from you. But it's nice to go and go, who am I again? What do I believe again? Like, what is my purpose again? And you can't do that until you quit doing. And it's the doing that just keeps going. It's a snowball that keeps rolling down the hill. And
well, it's a template. It's a template. It's like, I would have this, my set list, and it's almost like, okay, that joke's there. Now another joke takes its place. And then it's probably the same with music. It's like, it's kind of the same song or it's kind of the same deal and then, which is great and it's fun, but then you're like, and just like you said, it needs to be just kind of stored for a while.
Well, I think we all ask the question, God, are you happy with this? Are you, is this, you know, am I going to stand in front of you? I've had this confrontation with God several times. God, am I going to hear well done, good and faithful servant? I mean, I know I will because of my relationship with Jesus and that's settled. But am I going to hear, hey, you did well, son. You did what I wanted you to do. And again, you know, heaven's much more graceful and forgiving and wonderful than we could ever imagine. And so there's no fear in that moment. But there, in my dreams and here on the earth, and when I ask that question of God, and I kind of stand, you know, kind of bare before him going, I hope I'm doing what you've called me to do and what you've set me up to do. And again, you can only get to that by taking some time and maybe breaking the cycle of what you're in for a while. So I'm really excited that you got to do that.
Yeah, it's like how much is enough? One of my favorite verses it talks about the eyes of man are never satisfied, and that's just true. You can just be hammering out this over and over, but it's never enough. It's just like, what are you doing this for then? It's like, because you're never going to satisfy that. So you got to change your viewpoint, change your mindset. And realize that you have plenty of more than enough. And I think when you do that, you start to relax. And I don't, like I said, now I feel like, I don't know if I think the show's better now, but I know I enjoy it more. Because the expectations are, and the grind is just not so loud anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's good. Hey, I think it's good.
Yeah.
And let's have some fun and let's just hang out.
Hey, you got to enjoy it too. That's part of, I think that's part right. of God's gift to us is not making other people laugh or enjoy the music, but we actually enjoy what we're doing as well. And that's where ultimately God, I think, wants us to be. It's like, I want you to partake of your offering as well. That's actually in the Old Testament. It's part of the laws of the Israelites bringing their sacrifices, their livestock and their grains and their oils to the priest to be sacrificed as their offering. And then they're instructed to go sit down at tables and whatever is roasted and whatever is made in there, they know they're going to be served that. And so God wants you not only to give and to be a part of his kingdom in that way, but also he wants you to enjoy it, you know, because if we do all of this and we get to the end of our lives and go, I didn't really like it. I don't know. I mean, what a waste, huh? I mean, we should be the first one satisfied by what we do. And let me ask you this: Does your family laugh at you? Does your wife and kids think you're funny?
We have a lot of fun, and my whole family is. I think everybody's funny.
Yeah,
but they have their own unique approach to comedy. I enjoy watching them. It's free entertainment, like grandkids now. It's just,
oh, how many do you have?
I have two grandkids, two little boys.
How old are they?
And they're 4 and 1.
Oh man. So, I've got 5 and they're all kind of in that age range.
Yeah.
I love making them laugh. I love singing songs to them and they're just a whole new audience, aren't they?
It's wonderful. And you know, with my wife, she's, like I said, that's my favorite noise is her laugh. And just all the time, even like, you know, last night we were getting ready for bed and I'm just doing this weird dance and just, you know, doing your little thing and just acting stupid. And I'll just kind of act like I'm looking off into nowhere. She says, what are you doing? You know, just any kind of response, because really your family they're not really into courtesy laughter. You got to bring it. They'll tell you if it's not funny, right? Almost the opposite. It will be funny, but they'll say, you're just, that's a dad joke. No, it's not. Just because I'm your dad doesn't make it a dad joke. That was funny.
How much longer are you going to do this? Do you think this will, do you feel like you're just part of who you are for the rest of your life?
I think about that sometimes. And, you know, I could do it. I'll probably be involved in some capacity for probably the next 10 years. I can see that. I do like the idea of film. I've been in a couple independent kind of things and I really enjoy that. Whether it's writing scripts or just my manager was like, hey, would you ever want to do a Hallmark movie? I'm like, absolutely. 100%. I don't care who it is. I'll be the goofy mailman or whatever. I don't care. You know, we'll see.
Well, I appreciate you and what you do and the gift God's given you. And, you know, again, that please take this in the right way. But I just laugh when I see you. I mean, I start laughing I think it's a spiritual gift, as we talked about my friend Chris Munch at Church on the Move.
Yeah.
When I see him, I just start smiling and laughing. He hasn't done anything, you know?
Right,
and then he
right.
sees me laughing and then he kind of does his thing, you know? And it's like, okay, that's, you know, I really appreciate that about you. Well, thanks for taking time. Yeah.
Sure. And I appreciate your mullet back in the 80s and 90s. And I was just, there's Andy, real good, cool. From the time began. That's my favorite For Him song, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
It was good. It was like, once again, that was, I worked at a Christian bookstore in East Texas. So I got to be, you know, I got to go to GMA every year.
Oh, wow.
And saw you guys perform many times and saw you in Truth, for crying out loud. Gee whiz.
Wow.
That was, yeah.
So Roger Breland said, is this true? He said you got saved at a Truth concert?
I recommitted my life to a Truth concert. And it was the guy in For Him, was his name. I think you might have been there because it kept changing. You know, it was always,
right, right.
The other guy, the dark-headed guy. In
Mark
For
Harris?
Him, was Mark.
Mark, yeah.
I think I know he was there and he prayed with me and everything. But that was awesome.
Wow. So we really go way back.
Really do. It's your fault, man. It's your fault. You guys are so smooth, dude. That was so good. It's like you just don't hear harmonies anymore, and nobody does. The music was just wonderful. And
Well, thanks. Well, I look back on those times, I appreciate what God allowed us to do through the music, but also the people that He put in our paths. And it's one of the reasons I love doing this podcast is you know, I've kind of forgotten how many people I know and have had interactions with. And, you know, we've made an imprint on each other's lives. And, you know, it's just fun to say, I know him and he's a good guy.
Yeah. And it makes a difference.
Yeah, it really does. And that's one of the reasons I was excited to have you on. Cause I'm just like,
yeah, buddy,
I know what I'm going to get with you. So yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, rock on. Well, come to a show, come say hi or something, man.
Yeah.
We'll have a coffee or something.
Absolutely.
All right, bro.
Hey, thanks for listening. Join me every Monday for new stories from the Christian music industry and beyond. And if you want more content like this, along with a lot of great music, join me for Worship with Andy Christman, airing on 500 stations around the world every weekend. And when you get a sec, run over to my website, andychristman.net, for information about my professional vocal coaching and an incredible new resource for worship pastors called The Worship Table. See you next time on the One Degree of Andy podcast.